Hey, welcome to the Chess Experience. On this show, it's all about helping adult improvers. I want to make learning chess easier for you to navigate, and I also want you to have a more fun experience along the way. I'm your host, Daniel Lona, a fellow chess amateur. Let's get to it. This show is sponsored by Chess.com, the world's largest chess community. One of Chess.com's most popular features is called Game Review. This feature weaves together a lot of benefits in one post-game analysis. For example, you can see how accurately you played, whether you made any moves that were deemed brilliant or great, which makes me feel a lot better about my chess when I get one of those. And Game Review also offers a virtual coach that gives insights on every move. It'll also show you alternate lines that would have been better for you to help you understand how you can improve your game. So go on chess.com, play a game, and try out the Game Review. Welcome to this week's show. My guest is Charlize van Zyl from South Africa. She's a woman international master who's made her passion for chess her entire life. Competitively, she's working with two coaches and gunning for the Women Grandmaster title this year, which we talk about. Plus, she's made her entire professional career centered on chess. She currently works in marketing for Forward Chess, a company that offers interactive chess ebooks. Additionally, Charlize is helping run the business Chess Kidding, which aims to make chess more fun and accessible for kids and adults alike. And if that weren't enough, Charlize has also recently become a reporter for FIDE for their most elite chess tournaments. And on that point, she will soon be doing reporting for FIDE at the Candidates Tournament. So in this episode, we talk about all these aspects of her chess life. One other small comment, which is that there were some minor technical issues when we recorded. First, about 13 to 15 minutes into the interview, there's some skipping on Charlize's audio, but it's brief and her answers were important, so I kept them in. I promise they won't last long. Also, there's 1 minute of her audio that we lost, which I explain at that moment in the interview, so it won't be confusing at all. Overall, those recording issues are pretty minor and they won't take away much from this very fun and entertaining interview. I'm sure you'll enjoy this one. Here's my interview with Charlize. Hi, Charlize. How are you?
Hi, Daniel. I am good. I'm sitting in load shedding though. I don't know if you know what that is in South Africa. Our power is out. So I have my little candle. I have tea I made before the power went out. So good. It's not just life this way.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that your power is out, but I'm impressed that you still, made our recording of this interview. You still, figured out a way to put it together and that you're here. So thank you. I'm even more honored now.
No shame. Life goes on, we get this every day for a few hours, 2 to 4 hours. So if I had to stop life while this happened, I wouldn't get anything done. Nevertheless, like any chess done. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that's more frequent than I thought, but I'm glad you're doing all right with it. Yeah, so I am excited to chat with you. We've been connected for a little while, but we really haven't had a chance to talk too much and interact. So I'm excited to learn more about, basically your chess life, so to speak, and everything that you have done and everything that you're doing right now with chess. So the first place I'd like to start with that is what I noticed you post not too long ago on social media about an amazing experience that you had doing some reporting at the FIDE World Rapid and Blitz Championship that happened recently. And, first, I guess I kind of have two questions for you. One is, how was the experience overall? And then also you mentioned in your post that you spoke with Magnus. So overall, and what was it like talking to Magnus both?
So overall, I think it was one of my most favorite chess experiences in general. It was short. It was only 5 days, but being in this hall with all the top players in the world, being able to speak to them, it was amazing. And being able to see them, while they're playing, and also outside, because a lot of people don't get to see that side of players. That was quite interesting. And the interviews themselves were cool. Everything was live, which, this is recorded, so it's fine. But live interviews in general are very stressful because, you know, you've got all these people looking at you if you mess up. I don't know. I even chipped at some stage. No one else noticed. So I hope people don't go rewatch this because I said this now. But yeah, live stuff is, I guess, a little bit nerve-wracking. And with Magnus, both of my interviews were live. And the first time he was very... I don't know, off, you know, like very difficult to speak to. But I did my research as an interviewer. I checked what his favorite football team is. And then I checked like a player from that team, Jude Bellingham. And then I kind of tried to create a question based on that. And okay, it was my final question, but I think that helped to put him at ease a little bit. So the second interview with him went a lot better. My goal was just to get him to like laugh a bit or even smile because he's so serious in the interviews, and I achieved that, so I'm happy.
Oh, nice. That's great. So you said that like you looked up that his favorite sport was football, which I think for like the American translation of that would be soccer, right? And yeah. So when you asked him about that, is that where he kind of warmed up? Was he more comfortable talking about like his favorite sports?
Yes. Yes, exactly. and from his favorite team, Real Madrid, I mentioned a player from there. And I think he was kind of taken aback by a question like this in the middle of like a chess tournament. Right. But my thing with my interviews was you're in between games. You don't want to really be thinking too much when you answer things. You just want to keep it fun. So yeah, I think that's was like check achieve.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's an amazing experience, like I said, overall, that you got to you know, interview players there and be at that event. I can't imagine what that's like. And then second, just interviewing, you know, Magnus himself, that is an incredible opportunity. I don't expect Magnus to be on my podcast anytime soon. I don't want to discount the possibility, but it's unlikely. So I'll ask you, since I may never get the opportunity, how was it like just going into that? Were you super nervous to interview Magnus? I mean, just, you know, basically just the greatest player on the planet right now.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's why I had these questions written in my notes. If I could, I would have had my notes up open during the interview, but obviously that wasn't possible. Right. So it was nerve-wracking the first time, I guess, because there's all this pressure. You're speaking to the literal greatest player of all time. And at the same time, right, you don't want to be fangirling too much. You know, you got to keep it profesh. So there was a fine line between meeting someone so great and then, you know, keeping that level head. So, yeah, with the podcast thing, actually in the conference of the post tournament conference, someone asked him if he would come on their podcast like in front of everyone while this is being recorded, and he like shut that down. So if you're gonna approach that, yeah, just I mean, I guess dropping an email or like meeting him not in front of everyone at a press conference would be the way to
go. I won't right. I won't just like jump right in front of him and say, hey, you want to be on my show? Yeah. I'll be a little more strategic about it.
Yeah. you got to get a chess brain, think it out to get this to happen. Right.
Exactly. So yeah, that's kind of like one of your most recent big things with chess that you've done. So yeah, I'd like to just kind of flip it and talk about the very beginning for you in your chess life. Starting with just how you got into chess. Did you grow up in a chess family? What was that like for you?
Yeah, my dad played chess. He kind of learned from his dad, who was like club level player, just for the enjoyment. And then my dad was very talented, but never got the opportunity to really do anything with chess. So when my sister and I came along, he was like, you're going to learn chess. And he always had the passion, you know. He would have the weekly club nights. He had a lot of his friends, that he made through chess. You know, they still have this really, really good culture in chess. And he tried to get us into that. And I really didn't like it at first, to be honest. I mean, you're 7 years old, you going to these club nights where there are only like men playing, like older men. None of your friends are there. No kids are there. Like, you don't want to play chess, you know? So it took a while. We had so many fights. I mean, my dad literally had to take us to these tournaments not against the wall. That sounds bad. But, you know, like, we knew it was good for us, but we would rather have wanted to do anything else. It's just, I guess this is how I perceive chess at that age. And a big thing of what I'm doing today in my job is to change that for kids, to have it, you know, show the fun aspect of chess from the beginning, because I didn't get that too much as a kid. And then I did really well growing up. I think I just was very naturally inclined to playing ahead of my peers. And I was one of the first girls to come up in my age group in my city. I think I was one of the first girls to even be board one at our national under 10 championships. Like, no girl had ever been on board one. So it was weird navigating this whole chess world as a little girl. And then I got my title, my women's national title, master title, when I was 13. And I was serious for chess for a little bit, but then the teenage years came, and boy, those were not great for my chess, shall I say, because I just wanted to be social, have fun. I didn't want to spend every single weekend at a chess tournament. So I actually stopped playing, and I went a few years without playing chess, and then I came back towards the end of high school, and here we are today.
Yeah, that's understandable that in your, as you got deeper into your teen years, that you didn't want to spend as much time competing and playing. That makes sense. I think that's true for a lot of people at that age, if they were into a sport or something like that, that all these other interests start to pull your attention at that time. Just one question, rewinding it just a little bit. So I think it's really interesting that at first you weren't too excited about chess. You were kind of reluctant to play at first. And that lasted a little while. It wasn't just the one time. What caused a shift? What made you start to get excited about the game, or at least, if not excited, at least enjoy it?
So I think when you're told to do something, your passion isn't necessarily there, because it feels more like an obligation. So when I gave myself that time away from chess, I could see it outside of the competitive landscape and actually understand how much I loved the game and how deep my passion actually was. And so I was able to come back because I love chess and because I want to play, and not because someone was telling me to play. And that was a huge, huge change, even for my play. It drastically improved just because of recognizing the love from chess comes from me, not from my dad.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, first of all, I'm impressed that you got all the way to the point where you earned the WIM title without it being your own, primarily at least, your own desire, your own interest. It was more kind of influenced by your father. And only later did you realize how much you love the game. We'll talk more about this, but I'm excited to see, all that you achieve now that you've kind of, I guess you've achieved some of that already in recent years, but what you achieve going forward now that you realize your own passion for it, because you could earn a WIM title without even realizing that. It's really impressive.
So the WGM title with passion will be even, better.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about that next phase for you that you kind of touched on already, where, after this period in your teen years, you were, you kind of stepped away from the game. You weren't as interested in it. What made you realize later that, this was something that you could be passionate about? In other words, something that made you want to return to it as an adult? What sparked that realization for you?
That's a good question. I think it's, when you play all these tournaments growing up and you you're always competitive. You have this kind of love-hate relationship for chess when you play competitively. Like, nothing makes you feel better than winning a game, like a good game, and nothing, no boyfriends, no heartbreaks, makes you feel worse than losing a game. I've always felt that. Like, it's a complex relationship. And it's a very difficult relationship to have when the passion is not really there, you know? So that's what I was scared of. I hated losing, and I felt so anxious playing any kind of tournament. Even, you know, being a kid, my anxiety was always really, really hectic, like very big for tournaments. And so when I was able to play chess kind of leisurely, you know, like do my puzzles, play my games because I want to, and I can actually see chess in a different lens, like I'm playing this game because I enjoy it and I don't have to play the game to win it, that changed things for me, because I realized you can, you know, really love chess and you just don't have to just play to win the game. You can actually love the process of the game, not just the result. So yeah, that's, I guess that answers the question. I think that was very long, but
yeah, you definitely answered the question and it wasn't too long at all. I appreciate you kind of exploring that and thinking about that. So yeah, I wanted to touch on the point that you just mentioned about how you were able to kind of re-engage with chess in a more leisurely way without the pressure of competition. It sounds like that was one of the ways that you were able to see it differently, right? Like you could do it without pressure. And when you were doing it in a more relaxed setting, that's what made you realize what you could love about the game.
Yes, exactly. Because in the beginning, I had the pressure and the competitiveness, which is an ingredient to playing well and, you know, to becoming good. But passion, I feel, is an even bigger ingredient. So when I had the passion, when I started loving the game just by playing games, doing puzzles, watching videos, following tournaments without the pressure of, you know, let's remember this for our next game. Just because I'm seeing chess, I'm loving what I'm seeing. It's cool just exploring different ways of seeing chess and playing chess. And then after that, coming back like, okay, now I want to start doing this competitively again. That was an even better step for me because it became like, wow, now I can actually try to refine my skills in something I love. And it's so cool to have a life like that, you know, to be like, whoa, I really like this thing. I love this thing and I want to become better at it. So I'm going to become better at it because I have so much respect for the game and love for the game.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I noticed you competed in the 2018 Chess Olympiad. I guess you were about 19 then. So I'm guessing that was probably close in time to that period we're talking about, right? When you kind of returned to the game more on your own terms and seeing it in new ways. Were you around that age, 18, 19, when that was starting to happen for you?
So I came back to chess when I was about 17 years old. I just started playing a bunch of these tournaments in my hometown, like high school tournaments. But I mean, I was winning them full score kind of a thing. The competition wasn't too strong at all, but it was, you know, good for the confidence to kind of come back and just win like that. And so I slowly got myself up to making the Olympia team for the first time, actually. And that's because the selection was based on like activity and performance in activity. And because I had done so well in my comeback, I got a spot in the team. I don't think I was at my strongest to play the Olympiad at that point, but I think it was, you know, it's brought us to where we are today. So I'm not mad about it. So yeah, I guess 18 years old, I would say, was like the proper comeback age.
Yeah, well, that's still really impressive. I know you said that you got stronger even beyond that time. But as you said, it was the first time you qualified. So that's a nice part of your comeback story there.
Yeah.
What was that? And that was your first time competing at the Chess Olympiad. What was that experience like, you know, having the opportunity to be there and representing your country?
I mean, it was so nerve-wracking. I felt like such a small fish in like this huge ocean, you know, with all these top players. And it was like actually such a difficult time in my life, and to have played that all together, like mentally it wasn't the best time, but the fact that I kind of went through it and was able to experience this and play for my country, I can't explain how overwhelming it felt, but in a good way too, because you know, you're in a hall with literally all the top players in the world, you're representing your country, people are following from home, there's nothing quite like it. But that was the first time I kind of felt like I didn't belong in the team, so it wasn't I wasn't confident at all in my play, in anything. The last Olympiad, I mean, there's a drastic change in my play, but also confidence. So even though, again, in the latest Olympiad in India, I, you know, still a small fish in the big sea, but more of a fish who kind of is finding her way and feels like she belongs there.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's fantastic that you had that growth in that time, which was, I guess, yeah, about 4 years. And then the pandemic kind of interfered with the 2020 Olympiad, right?
Yeah, the pandemic. I was so sad because I wanted to get my rating up, play tournament, and then all of that was just halted. So, yeah, but I think a lot of people have the same stories. You know, it is what it is. We move on, we keep fighting and going on from there, getting stronger.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's another Olympiad on the horizon. I know it's a combination of qualifying and competing. So will you be going to the 24 Olympiad too?
So we will still have qualifications, but I mean, I should be playing. So it's just a matter of which board. Hopefully board one this year. So we'll see about that. But yeah, I'm excited to be there to represent South Africa in Budapest, of all places. I haven't been there, but I've been told that it's amazing.
Yeah, that's exciting. If you do make first board, would that be the first time competing as first board in the Olympiad for you?
Yes, my first time I was reserve player, and then second time I was board two, but most of the tournament I was playing on board one, because our board one, like, she sat out a few times, I think she wasn't feeling well. So I have board one experience, but you know, this time it's gonna be like, no, this is my board. I want to play here most games, so that will be the first time.
That's awesome. I love hearing that. So, yeah, there's a lot of different elements to talk about with your chess career, Charlize, and I'll be bouncing around a little bit. So I want to come back to discussing more about, you know, kind of your competitive aspirations. But we did kind of cover now, like, your return to chess and why you got back in it and all that. And obviously you're growing as a player in this time, as evidenced by attending the Olympiad and performing better in those Olympiad events as well. But I kind of want to shift now to talking a little bit about the, I guess maybe a bit more the non-competitive side of your chess career. Somewhere in those years that we're talking about, kind of between 2018, maybe 2022, I'm guessing you decided to make it your career. What made you want to do that?
Wow. So I don't think anyone who has a chess career other than professional career really believes that it's possible. Or even looking back in time, like if you told me that, oh, you can have a career in chess, I would have told you you're crazy. And this is even up until university. I studied media, communications and culture, which is like very much on media, marketing and all of these things. And a lot of my university, my degree's work was based on chess, funnily enough. Like I was writing these 3,000 word papers on chess, like gender in chess, like the culture of chess. And so I found a way to kind of incorporate this non-chess thing with chess. And that was the start of my career, I suppose. Right after I graduated, I started working for Chessable. I worked for Chessable as a content editor and a quality controller, and that I'm very fortunate for that job, because it was right out of university. And you know, when you're graduating, when you're studying, you always have these things in your head, like, what are my next steps? What job am I going to get with this degree? And my Chessable job had, I think, nothing to do with my my degree. Like, there was no marketing, no media. It was just chess. I was literally looking at Grandmaster files and then sending them back, telling them what to improve and stuff like that for the courses. And it was a lot of fun, but it wasn't, you know, what I I studied and I thought, you know, this is just the way life goes. Let's see what happens. And yeah, that was the start. And then after Chessable, there was the India Olympiad, the Olympiad in India. So I took a break, studied, focused a little bit on my chess career. And then I got a job in forward chess where I finally combined my degree and my chess, you know, career, and kind of put them together to do marketing and chess. So this like was just a match made in heaven. When I thought about doing marketing, I didn't think chess marketing, but here we are.
Yeah, well, so all this is interesting to me on several levels. First of all, I think it's really exciting that you're already at that point that you're describing. You've worked for Chessable, you're working for Forward Chess. That's all really exciting for my perspective in terms of, you know, making a career out of chess. But I'm guessing like in that time, I know you said that it was hard to imagine making chess a career in a non-competitive way. But you must have had some ideas that like maybe this is possible, right? Because you're seeking these places out. So were you in a place where you were asking yourself like, maybe I can make it a career? Is there some way I can do that? Okay, there's these chess companies. Let me apply for them. Maybe that's a way to make it, you know, my entire life and not just competition.
Maybe on a subconscious level, like this is why I did all my papers and I did all my stuff on chess, like even group work, like we would do films and stuff and I would suggest making a chess movie, doing the chess stuff, like I brought chess to even my non-chess peers. So maybe on a subconscious level, but literally right up until I graduated. Well, it's right before I graduated that I got the Chessable job because, you know, it came up out of nowhere. They're like, they're looking for content editors. And that was the first point I was like, okay, let me apply for a chess company. Like before that, it wasn't a thought at all to actually be working for a chess company.
Okay, so you're at this point now where you're working for Forward Chess, which is awesome. Oh, yeah, just for people who don't know, can you describe a little bit about what that is? I think probably most of my listeners have heard of it or used it, but just for those who haven't yet.
Yeah, so basically, chess books are not the easiest to read, right? I think we can all agree that you're sitting in bed with the book, visualizing the moves. You know, it's not always the easiest. Or even getting a chessboard, you know, having to unpack the positions all the time, pack them again. What Forward Chess does is we have ebooks, so books you know, like the most popular chess books there are. It's not, you know, we don't create our books. We just have the platform for books where they're interactive. So as you're reading the board, you have the book, you have an interactive board on the screen. It's either laptop, phone, iPad, any digital device. So while you're reading, you can have your board with you. You can make notes in the book. You can highlight. You can use engine analysis. There are even like puzzle features, puzzle tools. So you can test yourself with the puzzles in the books without seeing the solutions. So no cheating. And yeah, it's just the most convenient way to read a chess book. I know a lot of people like the paper feel, but realistically, you can't carry like 10 books with you when you travel, you know, even one book like Dorotsky. It's heavy and it takes space. So Chess, Forward Chess combines all of this. You're able to take your books literally everywhere. And with me, I travel a lot. And so even, you know, if I wasn't working for Forward Chess, I would be using them all the time because it's just so convenient to have everything like accessible. And yeah, that's basically what we do. We work with all the biggest publishers in the world. So chess publishers, you can find all the best books. And yeah, it's a lot of fun being able to have access to all these books as well. I think that has contributed a little bit to my chess improvement over the last years.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I mean, I can speak from experience. I think it's a great tool. So yeah, I want to talk now about your own chess business, both what it's about and kind of what inspired you to launch it. So your business is called Chess Kidding. Let's start with like what inspired you to create it.
So I have my friend, Siadima Tlale. She is one of the first African players in South Africa to have gotten like South African colors, like national colors. Her and her sister, they're a pretty big deal. They are a pretty big deal because they, you know, brought a lot to chess. She came up with this idea for Chess Kidding last year, June. To just, you know, she always wanted to have her chess, kind of chess school and bring chess and as a passion project. Because she's a lawyer, she wasn't doing anything with chess growing up. And then she just came back, she's like, if I could do anything with my life and money wasn't an obstacle, what would I do? She asked herself this. And then she decided chess was it. So she got this idea for Chess Kidding. At the time when I came on board, she wasn't too sure what to do with it, like where this is going, what is going to lead to. It was like, let's do some fun chess events. And then about last year, mid last year, she got me on board and we decided, you know, we're going to duo team this and we are going to bring chess to South Africa in a way that is fun and engaging because we both have this very deep passion for chess, but we both stopped playing eventually, you know, and because of the way we, you know, we were taught chess and the, I guess, anxiety of playing tournaments and all of that, and just the what chess did to our brains as little kids, I suppose. And we wanted to bring it to kids in a way that you can play chess competitively, okay, but you can also play chess because it's fun. And I think in South Africa, we have so many great coaches. We have a cool chess culture, but it's very small. And I think a lot of people are intimidated by chess because they think, you know, you need to be the super smart person who, I don't know, lives, breathes chess and has a specific mind to be able to understand it. When the reality is that absolutely anyone can play chess, right? Like anyone. It doesn't matter who you are, your background, you can play chess. Becoming great is another conversation. Like, of course, you need to put the work into it, but learning how to play is different. So our vision was just that. And so we spent the latter half of last year doing these cool events for kids and for adults, like the whole spectrum. We wanted to bring chess to everyone. We also did some outreach programs in our townships, which are like impoverished communities here in South Africa, to take chess to them, take chess sets to them, because we basically just want to, you know, spread it all over the country, just take it everywhere and make it colorful. If you see our logo, you can find us on Instagram, by the way, we're chess.kidding. And even our name, it's like in the name, right? That it's just fun, colorful, vibrant. And that's my passion project that I have going right now. Teaching kids, teaching adults, just bringing chess to everyone, really.
That's fantastic. So basically the idea is to make chess accessible and interesting to new players. Is that how you would describe it?
Yes. Yes. New players, also current players, because, you know, because in South Africa, our chess culture is not as huge as, let's say, Europe. We don't have many chess tournaments, like federated especially. So the ratings here are super low, you know, like they... Not even me. I would say like people, you go see them in a tournament, they're much lower rated than their actual capabilities and how strong they are. Their rating does not reflect that. And this is South Africa. And because we're all playing against each other, so like ratings coming, going, you know, you need more players. We need more people being exposed to chess and having that access to chess. So I believe that kind of gap in what South Africa's problem right now is to fill it with getting more people to play and more people to become good at chess and to have the right tools to become good at chess, but also just for the enjoyment.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So are you primarily focused on helping? I mean, it sounds like you there's like at least an emphasis on bringing more people in South Africa to the game of chess, which is great. Just for people listening right now, I know that, you know, many of them are not in South Africa. So if they wanted to engage with your company, can they do that?
Yes, so like we've expanded so much since last year. We're getting international coaches as well to do online coaching, but we also want to expand our events because events is where I guess that's where the fun lies. You know, like when we do events for kids, we do these boot camps where it's for all ages, and you're gonna get pizza, you're gonna get your slushy or your milkshake, and we're gonna make chess fun. We're gonna play games, and it's just a whole day of chess fun. And for adults, we have events like chess sipping. We're actually going to have a Valentine's edition. What we do is we teach chess to adults, those who have never played before or those who know a little bit. We teach them chess from scratch, but in a relaxed environment. You know, you can have your wine or you can have your water, whatever floats your boat. And it's just a social environment where there's no pressure to be good. It's not a lecture or anything. We keep it relaxed. And these are kind of events we hope to expand. We get a lot of comments on our Instagram. Most of our followers, funnily enough, are from the US.
Oh,
Somehow
really?
the stats show, demographic. So we're hoping, maybe we can expand these events, the chess sipping brand, the chess kidding brand, overseas and take this. But our focus primarily is first South Africa and then Africa. But if we were to, expand it overseas, we would get work. We're working with players to get stuff like that done. International players, I'm saying.
That's awesome. So it sounds like you're mostly focused like on live in-person events. Is that right?
Yes, we have like weekly training for our kids. We're doing tournaments, but most of our stuff is live in person. We're also doing some books though, because again, we want little kids to see chess as colorful, fun. So we've created some coloring in books for beginners, where these chess pieces are like characters that have come to life. They all have their own name, their own face, and it's just a coloring in book for kids. Kids to be, even if they're not really learning how the pieces move just yet, they can understand what chess is about in terms of, this is the family, this is the king, the queen, this is what they look like. They're taking care of each other, they're fighting together, and just to kind of open the kids' imagination up. So this coloring book idea is the only non-live thing that I'm hoping we can really expand all over the world.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love all that you're doing with this. It sounds great. And for people listening, we'll have links to your site as well as the social media accounts for Chess Kidding as well, so they can check that out and follow you there. So yeah, in addition to all that we've talked about already, the Chess Kidding business that you're a part of and helping spearhead along with your work at Forward Chess. As we mentioned in the beginning of this episode, you're also doing live reporting at elite chess tournaments, which is amazing. You know, we talked about your most recent one. What others do you have on the horizon for yourself? I assume you have probably at least one on your calendar already for doing some live reporting at a chess event.
Yes, I'm actually going to be doing that at the Candidates in Toronto in April.
Yeah, that's a pretty big one. Hard to top that. Hey, just popping into the interview here for a minute to let you know we lose a minute of the recording where I asked Charlize about how long she worked for FIDE. In that lost minute, Charlize mentions that her first work for FIDE was with the gig that we talked about at the beginning of the interview, where she did reporting at the Rapid and Blitz World Championship back in December. And so now we return to the interview where Charlize describes her first experience working at that FIDE event as a reporter.
Let me tell you, the people work, like the FIDE workers and the broadcasters, you could tell they were a little nervous because here comes this newbie. They don't really know much about me. They've seen my videos on like YouTube and stuff, but live reporting is obviously different. So everyone was a little nervous about that in the beginning, but by the end of it, people came to me like, I kind of exceeded their expectations. Like they did not think it was going to go the way it did. So, yeah, that was my first time.
Well, that's amazing. Well, okay. So first of all, they must have had faith in you to, have you do the World Rapid and Blitz. But But it's also like just really impressive that that was their, you know, that was the event that they had you work for them for the first time. Like nothing like throwing you into the deep end right away.
Right? Yeah. Debut is this big thing. Yeah, at least it was 5 days, but it's so, yeah, a really big event in the chess calendar. And to start with that was, yeah, a lot.
Well, yeah, that's still so exciting that you had that opportunity. And obviously it went well because now you'll be doing the candidates for them next. So that's really impressive. The live aspect of it that you mentioned, I couldn't help but think about that. Yeah, I feel like pretty much safer and cozier here behind a mic, you know, recording a podcast where it's not live. I'm not on screen and I, you know, not at a like a crazy high pressure big event like that. So I can only imagine how intense it would be there. That's basically my point. That just seems very, very stressful to have to do that as a first time event.
Yeah, no, the first time I went live was, okay, so the way the program was planned by the broadcasters is quite funny. They actually only slotted me in, like, I think once or twice. Like, I was going to do 30 seconds the whole day. And, it was a little bit disappointing when I saw the schedule. I was like, okay, sure. I came all this way just to do 30 seconds in a day. And then I think the first time after we went live, we realized, okay, this is actually working well, so we can do more. And then we just started doing, you know, trying to find players when we could, showing the kind of energy of the event, and it became a lot smoother then by just realizing I can just be myself and show people at home what I'm seeing here. And that went well. Like, it worked out for everyone, I think. Even though it was live, it was very nerve-wracking the first time. Don't get me wrong. If you go look at the first live one, like, I ended off speaking, like, I didn't know what to say because I had to speak for like 2 minutes and then they kept going and saying, okay, continue. And I had nothing to say. And because this is my first time, I couldn't really think of it on the spot. And then that night I went home, I started preparing more things to say in the cases of, you know, having nothing to say. So I guess it's a kind of trial and error. And yeah, it worked well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's really exciting for you, Charlize. I'm just thrilled that that's a new part of your chess career, and look forward to seeing you doing your reporting of the candidates too. I think it'll be an amazing. I know it'll be an amazing time for you, and I'm excited to see the videos that come from that.
Thank you. I'm excited too.
Yeah. So yeah, let's kind of. Finish our conversation about your competitive chess life right now, because we talked about all the kind of non-competitive stuff, forward chess, live reporting, the business that you're working on. But, you know, as we're speaking right now, you're still very active with your own competitive chess goals. You mentioned the WGM title, earning that. Is that the main competitive chess goal that you have for yourself right now?
I think for this year. That is. And I know that's very big to say, you know, I just want to get the WGM title, but I've kind of been inching towards that, working towards that. And if you're wondering how I have time between all of these chess jobs and actually finding time to practice, just know that I don't really have a social life. It's just chess and coming home and, well, I work from home, so that's, I guess, helps a lot. But yeah, this next month, I'll be playing the African Championships in Ghana. The last time I played African Championships about in 2022. It's so weird to think we're in 2024. Anyway, that was in Nigeria. I came second, and that was my first time playing the African Championship. So next month, the plan is to win it. I've been working. I know it's a lot to say, but I'm putting it out into the universe because I believe hard work pays off. So we'll see how that goes. But when you win this African Championships, you do get an elect title, like WGM elect. And then it's about getting the rating to 2100, which is, I think the rating goal is bigger for me, like whether I get the title or not. This year, I'm going to be playing to end the year off being 2100.
That's great. I love hearing that. And I assume that if you win that, that you'll be posting about it on social media. So we'll know, right?
Oh, yeah. Now everyone's going to know if I win that. The whole Chessworld will be everywhere because of me. And I know it's one thing, you know, talking and doing, but I just want to say, I think growing up as a kind of anxious and insecure kid and not feeling like, oh, if you do well, you got to kind of hide your accomplishments. Now I'm in that space where I'm putting it out and I'm trying to be positive about it and think about like making it happen, because I do believe if you put in the work, you will, you know, it will reflect in some way, whether it's now or whether it's in a few years. Any work you put into your craft has to show at some point, right? So that's why I am this confidence. It's confidence based on hard work. Let's just say that.
Yeah, well, that's justified for sure. And you told me that you were working with two coaches. So, I mean, you're definitely putting in the work and getting all the help that you can. That's really amazing. So just kind of like a one deep little deeper dive question on chess itself, because I know we don't like talk about the game as much yet. But I am fascinated by and excited about your goal for going for the WGM title. I know... kind of at your level, there's always a concern of not letting your opponents know too much about what you're up to with openings and other things, perhaps. But, you know, within that context, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, kind of what skills you feel you need to develop or hone that will take you from where you are right now to that WGM title.
Yeah. So, that's a really good question. I think, you know, having a training plan that works for you obviously is also trial and error. But previously for my tournaments, I would prep for every opponent. Like my repertoire wasn't solid at all. So I would get this GM prep for that player, you know, learn 20 moves theory, forget all of it by the end of the tournament. And just, I don't know, this is the way I used to do things, and it makes you really nervous for, you know, having to remember before your game what you played, what you just spent so much time on. And so now I've been working on actually having a solid repertoire that suits my style. It's because it's my game at the end of the day, you know, you're going to be playing all kinds of opponents, but your game, the way you play, you have a certain style. So your repertoire shouldn't really be based on who you're playing. Like that's actually so silly saying this out loud. It should be based on how you play. And that's a big shift I've made in terms of openings, but also more of understanding rather than memorizing, because I would try to memorize everything and it works for a certain, you know, prepping before a game. But when you're working for a long-term opening preparation, there is some element of memory, of course. You have to know the moves, but it's more of understanding why does this piece go there. And so that's why it's been really helpful working with top players of, you know, understanding why openings happen the way they do. You know, someone didn't just, someone came up with this for a reason. There's a reason the structure works in this specific way. And so that's what I've been working on. And it's been interesting because it's a whole different kind of chess as well. You know, you're learning what chess is about in a way when it comes to openings. So that's been really interesting. But in terms of other things I'm working on in my chess, it's more about being able to visualize and visualize very far, especially with in-game positions and, you know, positions with fewer pieces and just sitting, not moving any pieces. And that I am very happy about how that's going, because it's fun. It's so fun being able to solve something, you know, 10, 15 moves ahead that you do all in your head. And I'm teaching my little kids how to do this now, like from 2 moves, 3 moves. And it's also cute to see how they are just so happy with themselves after they find the solution by not moving the pieces. So yeah, this is it's a difficult part of training, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate hearing all those different elements of what you're working on. It fascinates me, because this has come up before in other interviews that I've done. It's something I've learned by interviewing other titled players, because you know, I'm simply a club player. I'm not an advanced player by any measure. And, you know, it's pretty much the rating and skill level of most of my audience. They're club players, you know. And what you talked about is advice that we receive too, and things that we have to work on, which is making sure, like you said, to not only memorize the moves, but make sure you have that understanding of why they're happening, as well as like finding a repertoire that's suitable to your playing style and what you want to do. I mean, those are things that have come up with my coaches that I've worked with. And obviously yeah. you're doing it, not to diminish anything. You're obviously doing all this at a much higher level than I am. But it's fascinating though to me that some of the same themes still apply even as you get better at chess to yeah. where you're at.
Yeah, of course. I think we should also ask a top player, like if this is something that would be quite an interesting study, like the same concepts at the different levels of playing and how studying is approached.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at the very least, it seems like these are themes that, you know, are things to work on for a very long time. Like it doesn't just yeah. suddenly end because you improved 100 points or 200 points.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing about chess. Like the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And it's just this never-ending cycle of learning. But that's what's amazing about it, right? It's just infinite. So yeah, I really believe that the more you know, the more you realize you don't know in chess.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's both humbling and fascinating at the same time. So yeah, Charlize, it's been fantastic talking with you about all this. I'm really excited for everything that you're doing in chess. I just love that. I mean, it's just, your passion for the game is just so clear, and I love that you are. I guess I don't know exactly what the right phrase is, but turning that passion into a lot of different parts of your life, you know, from yeah. live reporting to working for Forward Chess to your own competitive goals. It's just really cool that it's just such a big part of your life. I mean, obviously, I'm a huge chess fan myself, or I wouldn't be running this podcast. But as a huge chess fan, I just love seeing someone like yourself turning that passion into a reality in a lot of different parts of their life. So that's really cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, and it's been really cool talking with you about all this. So just to kind of do the last part of our interview is what I do now with all my guests. It's just kind of like a fun, easier question segment, but they're supposed to be easier. You know, like some people have felt pressure when I asked them to name their favorite player, but there's really no pressure here. Just for fun. So let me dive into those questions for you now, beginning with exactly what I just referenced. Who is your favorite player of all time?
So this is an easy one for me because it's Judith Polgar, not just her chess, but what she's done for chess. Like, yeah, I don't even think it needs explanation.
Yeah, no explanation needed. That is a great choice. If you could play a great player of the past who is no longer alive, who would it be?
Definitely Paul Morphy. I love Morphy. I named my first cat after Morphy. But Morphy's chess was just, you know, it would be interesting to see how it holds up today because he was very much ahead of his time, of course. And yeah, I would just like to play Morphy if I could.
If you could play any top player in the world right now, who would it be?
I would say Zhu Wenjun. Because, current female world champion, and she's been doing big things for chess as well. And I feel like she's at a very interesting time of her career. I'm very excited to see where that goes. But in general, yeah, I would love to play her in a match.
If you could hang out with any well-known player for an evening, who would it be?
Ooh. So this actually goes back to my reporting time. I had an interview with Valentina Kunina right after she won the Women's Blitz. And she's just the nicest person ever. She's so sweet. And she's going like through so much with her health and everything. But she's just like one of the sweetest top players I've ever met. And the way she was so nice, like she just won a world championship, but she was so normal and nice. And yeah, I would love to hang out with her, I think. We got a selfie together, by the way. I had her put on my 2024 glasses. I posted it on my Twitter. I got a selfie. And she was more than happy to do that. I got one with the nuns as well. That was more like selfie and go. But Valentina was like, I could take a few different poses. So, yeah. Hopefully we can
That's
hang out.
That's a great choice. I really like that as a choice because it's not something that I think It's not a person that most of my guests might mention, but I like that it is for you for the reasons you gave and because it reflects your own career. Like you've had the chance now to meet some of these people, so you know who might actually be a cool person to hang out with for an evening. Yeah,
who might not be so cool to hang out with.
Right, exactly. Right, yeah. So you filter that without having to name any names. So, back to the chess itself, your favorite opening as white.
So I think this is going to get a lot of hate. So, for me, the London, I don't really play it much anymore. But boy, when I did, I have some of my best games are in London. But even like transpositions from the beginning, I don't want to go too much into theory because it is my repertoire still. But my sure. favorite games have been in the London, and I think that will always be like one of my just favorite openings. Again, I know it's not a long-term opening, so I've kind of put it on the back pedal. Like you can't go play win African championships by just playing the London, I think, unless you do find your own lines or you find some like that's not just repeating the same moves over and over again, because I did start getting some repetitive games. But so London is awesome. Haters gonna hate. Yeah.
Sure. So, okay, quick follow-up on that for the London. What do you enjoy about the London?
It's just one of those openings where I can blitz out the first few moves and not worry about anything. Like, white is going to be okay in, like, every single position. And there are some people who say, it's boring and whatnot, but there are some really fun lines in London. Like you can get these crazy kingside attacks pushing your h-pawn, and I think that needs some more attention, like this aggressive side of London. London is just an easy opening to play, and it can flip to be aggressive at any point. And I love tactical play, so that's suited my style.
Your favorite opening as black?
So I want to say I don't really have one. Like I played Khan for years because this is what I was taught as a kid. And I do still play it every now and then, but I realize I started understanding what my style is in chess, and that was attacking chess, and Karakhan is not that. But I always have like a soft spot for Karakhan. I am exploring other openings for black, even Sicilians or e5s, trying to get the whole thing of reinventing my repertoire for black. So I'll have an answer for that, I think, maybe in a year.
Very cool. Well, if you come back on the show, I'll be sure to ask you that again in the future, if it's changed. So this is total fun question. If a chess genie existed and can grant you any one chess wish, what would you wish for?
I really like this question because I imagine how cool that would be. But also, I think I would take advantage of it by putting all of the theory in my head. Like, I want to, when I learn chess, I want to focus on, positions, tactics, in games. And I wish that all the opening business was already in my head. I didn't even have to kind of study that. So if I could get an encyclopedia of openings in my brain from this genie, I would be happy.
That is a great wish to ask for. I second that. And then my last question for you, if you had to do a career other than chess, what would you choose?
Maybe this goes back to my degree. I always love writing, like creative writing. And I love writing chess stuff now. I've written a few things on the 4Chess blog. But I think maybe I could have gone into some like novel writing as in English, you know, stories, fiction, something like that. I never really had a solid plan for my career. So maybe it would have been something creative like that.
Well, that's a great answer. Yeah, Shirley's, I really enjoyed talking with you. Like I already mentioned, I know I kind of already said all this, but I'll just say one last time. I think everything you're doing is really inspiring. And it was just a real pleasure talking with you and getting to know you a bit through our interview today. So yeah, I just want to thank you for taking the time to do this. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you as well. And what you're doing for chess and all the adult improvers. I think from COVID as well, that's been such a big surge in chess. And that's awesome, because again, you know, with my philosophy of chess, anyone can play, anyone can enjoy. It's cool to see this whole new culture of adult improvement. So, you know, yay for you as well. I'm very, very happy to have been on here and to have spoken to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that. Definitely, I'm cheering you on with your chess goals, for your competitive chess goals for yourself. And I'm excited that you're doing all this live reporting as well, because that means we'll get to myself and others listening. We'll get to see you out there at these top events and seeing you talk to these great players and all that. So all very exciting for you, Charlize, and just wishing you the best in everything.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Thanks for listening. This has been a production of my business, Adult Chess Academy. And that has a website with the same name if you want to look for it. You can also find me being way too active on Twitter by searching my username, Lona_chess. See you next week.